The Inside Ellen Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate, Leeds, postcode LS53AP. Check out PR Supplies on Facebook for all your home retail needs. Hello, welcome back to the Inside Ellen Road podcast. Calm down from Monday night yet, have we? It's still on. Leeds still have goals in their boots. Patrick Bamford still knows where the net is. Crescencio Somerville responded to suggestions Sammy Smodics was robbed of player of the season in the best possible fashion. And Junior Firpo nearly did a David Beckham versus Ecuador at the 2006 World Cup and threw up on the pitch. But seeing as Firpo is actually a better crosser than Beckham, he didn't actually hurl. Graham, have you ever come close to needing to make an emergency evacuation during a game of the aforementioned kind, or maybe even Gary Lineker at Italia 90 variation?
No, never have I needed that. I did very nearly throw up in your car on the way back from Bournemouth because...
The performance?
Well, yes, that was enough to make anyone queasy. No, it was more that I get slightly car sick, slight bit of motion sickness if I read too much in the car. And there was so much to read after Bournemouth because Twitter was absolutely on fire. There was some back and forth with the club. And I think the whole heady mix of the realization, I think I said to you in the car, it probably just can't be Javi Gracia. Like, it has to be more than that. Because I was starting to think, hang on a minute, this probably needs to be Victor Orta as well. And I don't know, just the drama of it all, Joe, just the drama. It all just whipped up my innards.
That was the same game where the fan or the young fan appeared to have been ignored by the players on the way as
That's
they were
it,
getting
yes.
on to the coach for the game.
And that was properly kicking off as we were coming back. There was so much going on. I think I was just excited. I was tired. I probably eaten too much sugar. Your driving's very erratic.
That.
That's probably the closest I've come to hurling in and around
in the line of duty.
Yeah, in the line of duty. What about you?
Me? Yeah, actually. Well, it's definitely bodily, but it wasn't any sort of evacuation. It was I was playing football in a junior game years ago. And I had what was called an ocular migraine. Now, if anyone listening has had one of those, they'll understand the fear that is induced when you first have one. So basically just the bottom half of my vision just disappeared. So I could see the ball coming, but I couldn't focus on it. And if I was trying to dribble with the ball, which, you know, was never my game anyway, then I couldn't actually see it if I was sort of looking ahead. So I had to tell my football coach, I'm going to have to come off. I can't see. Went to A&E. They said, you've had a very bad migraine. Sort yourself out. That was it, really. But very, very
was this,
scary,
was,
very odd.
Was this the closest you ever came to feeling like PJ in Biker Grove? He went blind, didn't he?
Yeah. I'm blind. Very good reference. Yeah. Yeah, that was the closest that I came to that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, good. No, nothing like junior. I did quite enjoy the fact that Firpo volunteered that information after Middlesbrough. So we're in the mixed zone with one of the Leeds press officers. Obviously shaking hands with junior, and you know, been stood there speaking to him for 5 minutes, and he goes, you know, I've had a fever for 3 days and I was nearly sick during the second half. And I was like, great, yeah, cheers, thanks for bringing one of the two ill players to come and speak to us. But no, he was good value, had lots of interesting things to say, and he also had one of his best games in a Leeds shirt. And I mean, you can't really pick a better game to have a bit of a blinder, can you?
Where did he go when he played on international duty recently?
He went to Peru, and I think the first game was at home in the Dominican Republic.
Mosquitoes? Any mosquitoes there, do you think?
You're trying to say that I've got malaria now?
I'm just trying to suggest you might have dengue fever, that's all. whatever Junior has, I would like some for the next time I play Monday Night Football, because if that's the desired effect, fair play to him. Like, that was for me one of his best performances. And not just because he provided two assists, Joe. We're not just going to reduce this to very base end product terms. Of course, the end product was important, but I thought he played quite well generally too. I thought the fullbacks did all right, actually. And yeah, his contribution was really important, was it? What a game. What a game of association football we had before us. And I've been wondering since, had Daniel Farke not ruined it, had he not come in and turned the music down and said, right, party's over, everyone, at halftime, what score might we have got? What scoreline? Because there were more goals, even though Farke pulled the plug. We could have ended up with a 7-8 or a 9-6 scoreline. It felt like one of those. Great game to watch.
I am going to quickly Google the most goals in a championship fixture, because it did.
Okay, let me guess.
5 goals in the first half. It did feel like it was heading that way.
Let me guess. I'm going to say 10. I'm going to, no, 11. I'm going to say somebody won like 7-4 or 6-5.
You know what? This is going to take a little bit of time, so we'll probably have to come back to this later in the episode.
Should we just sit in silence until you find it?
Yeah, that'll be really good for the listeners, yeah. No, we'll come back to that. But yeah, it did feel as though we could potentially get another 5 or 6 in the second half if things carried on that way. Yeah, not a game for the goalkeeping coaches, to say the least.
No.
It was so chaotic. Like even the first goal, the Borough goal, where it kind of takes a deflection, Ampadu steps out and it's like, oh, he's through on goal from one pass. It was an incredible watch. Well, I mean, we're definitely biased in saying it was an incredible watch considering the outcome. If it was 4-3 to Borough and it was Leeds sending Melier up, if it was Leeds deploying Melier as sort of like an attacking midfielder for the 6 minutes of stoppage time, I don't think we would be saying it was such an incredible game. And the tone of this podcast would be a lot different. But we don't have to worry about that. A mind-bending game in which you couldn't take your eyes off it, and yet you wanted, but you wanted to look away. You wanted it to be over and done with. There were periods in the second half where time was just moving slower. But yeah, incredible stuff.
Yeah, first half, really good fun, and I think what impressed me the most was Leeds' response to going behind, because when that goal went in, I think everyone thought, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, because it was the worst possible start. Early concession, kind of ugly, scrappy defense torn asunder by that deflected pass. Nyonto, it was, gave the ball away, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, he was tackled, wasn't he?
Yeah, tackled and robbed, dispossessed, coughed it up, and then Borough take full advantage. And at that point, you're thinking, this could all go horribly wrong. Because my feeling before the game was, they'll win this game and they'll be back, and then they'll roll through QPR because they'll be back and they'll be fine. My other thought was, if they lose this game, it's playoffs. You know, that's it. You know, that will be that, because they won't beat QPR, and then they're sliding backwards into the playoffs. You know, I went on a water slide quite recently, and I don't know what I did, but I find myself traveling backwards for the final 30 meters of the water slide. And I have to tell you, Joe, it was nowhere near as pleasant as traveling forwards. The impact was difficult. And that's how it is with the playoffs. You don't want to be sliding backwards into the playoffs. You want to be romping into the playoffs. You almost want to be the side who makes the playoffs on the last day, because you put together an incredible run and you've squeaked in, because you've got all the forward momentum and all the belief, and you've almost got nothing to lose because no one anticipated you being there. If you've had all season to think about the playoffs, and think about trying to avoid the playoffs, and then suddenly you find yourself crashing into them backwards, then it is not a dignified entry, and the mental state is not good. And I honestly think that was a real...
Can I just ask what everybody must be wondering right now? Where on earth did you go on a water slide recently?
It was indoor. It was at Lisburn Leisure Centre in Northern Ireland, and I would hardly recommend it to any visitor to Northern Ireland. Some terrific slides. My tip would be go when the Northern Irish kids are still at school, because then it'll be empty and you won't have to queue for any of the slides. I felt like that was a possibility if Leeds lost that game. So when they went a goal down, I wonder what the players were thinking. You know, I wondered what the away fans were thinking. And I know what people at home are thinking because they tell me relentlessly. And none of it was good. And then Leeds United's response was perfect, wasn't it? It was note perfect, the response. You know, to not only go and get a goal as quickly as they did, but then to get another 4 minutes later said a great deal about their character. I think they didn't go under, and they could have gone under because Borough wanted to attack. Borough wanted to go for it. They've got a striker who's in unbelievable form. One of us said that he would score in this game. One of us said that he couldn't score in every game, Joe. So well played. You win this one. And and he was dangerous. You know, he was, even though Rodon and Melier tried to combine to nobble him in that challenge, he was still very dangerous. So they could have gone under, and they didn't. And instead, Routier did something really good. You know, picks up the ball, runs it at the defence, and takes Dykstra with him, and stayed so far ahead of him that any challenge was always going to be a foul. The fact that Dykstra waited until it was the penalty area before making it was curious. great decision making, great for Leeds. And then all the Middlesbrough fans around us were all very gleeful because they thought Bamford had backed out of the penalty. Obviously not unaware that this is now the routine. Bamford took the penalty in order to draw any unnecessary heat from out of the Middlesbrough defenders and keeper, and then handed it off to Somerville. Pressure kick, wasn't it?
Yeah, very, very big moment. But again, it feels as though he seems pretty undisturbed or unperturbed by the pressure. Absolutely thwacks it into the corner, into the side netting. That's how you take a penalty. That was a real, real confident kick. And you didn't really want anybody else on the pitch taking that at that moment, did you?
No. I don't think there's anyone I'd rather at Leeds take a penalty. Maybe Pascal Struyck, but he's injured at the moment. Second goal reminded me a lot of Sheffield Wednesday. Junior Firpo sliding that kind of cross is just a nightmare for defenders, because if you go and try and attack that, the chances are you're going to put it in the back of your own net. And all Bamford had to do was time his run, stay onside, make contact, which he did. You know, he does make those runs quite a lot. You know, he scored quite a few goals, either getting in between the left back and the left side centre back, or position himself between the two centre backs, far enough away from either that they can't affect the challenge and it can't affect him when the ball comes in. And he made the run perfectly, got the required contact, and it felt important for him to score, didn't it?
Yeah. It felt, I mean, it was six games without a goal for Bamford. I mean, Farke has mentioned it several times already this season, hasn't he? You know, strikers like the going when they're scoring goals because it's easy for them, you know, to you know, they're not facing criticism. It's what they're paid to do. It's what they like to do. So six games without a goal during such a crucial period of the season, you know, he will have been feeling the pressure, you know, whether he likes it or not. And I think you could see that release and that relief in his celebration, and also in his post-match interview with Sky. Very smiley, wasn't he? I think it was very important for him to score that, because we were saying before kickoff, looking at his previous seasons, he's a very streaky striker. Someone who, you know, will go six games, for example, or longer without a goal. And then what was the sort of the onomatopoeia that you did when is, I don't know, that you scored like five in six for Borough?
I can't remember.
I think you imitated a machine gun, which I'm sure everyone would be keen to hear.
I am not some performing monkey for you, Joe, just to produce sound effects as and when. The mood has to take. Yeah, he is a streaky striker, and that much is not really in doubt now. It's proven. So here's to his latest streak, because it would be a fantastic time to hit one, wouldn't it? You know, just to finish off the season, maybe goal, brace, goal or goal, brace.
Goal, hat-trick would be nice.
Goal, hat-trick, yeah. Goal, Patrick. That would be some end to the season.
Yeah, that'd be good. I'm going to have to interrupt you, because I know, you know, people who are very keen on stats and that sort of thing who listen, they'll have been Googling the record-breaking game in Championship history, and they'll be screaming, just going, I know it already. And I do know it. And it's quite an interesting one. There were 13 goals when Charlton Athletic played Huddersfield Town on the 21st of December, 1957. 7-6 to Charlton, right?
7-6.
7-6, right? Listen to this. Goals were scored. And this is how incredible this game was, okay? So Huddersfield go 5-1 up. Bear in mind that they lose 7-6. They go 5-1 up in the 62nd minute and then concede in the 63rd and 64th, then eventually lose 7-6. Bonus points for you, Graham, if you can tell me who the manager of Huddersfield Town was that day.
It'll be Herbert Chapman.
Oh, that was very quick. It's also very wrong.
I thought if I said it confidently, I might just take you by surprise, and I might manifest that it was true. Okay, Huddersfield in 56.
Again, 57. So, you know,
56 and 57.
Real details, man. No, it's actually the 57-58 season. So
yes, that's right. 57-58 season. I mean, I know that Willie Duff was goalkeeper for Charlton around that time. And of course, Alex Bain, another Scotsman, was up front for Huddersfield. Ray Wilson was probably playing for Huddersfield probably around that time.
Yeah, he was, yeah. No, you're not surprising anyone here, because you do realise that when you turn to your side and then Google who the manager was, the difference in how you come across audio-wise is quite apparent.
I don't know. Who was the manager?
It was none other than Bill Shankly.
Really?
Mm. And I can't imagine why it was a 7-6 game, because he set them up in a 3-2-5 formation. So, yeah, that is the record. In fact, sorry, the joint record highest scoring game in Championship history.
It's sad to think that he never really went on to do anything after that.
Yeah, I mean, being 5-1 up in that game kind of just ruined his career to lose 7-6.
That was it for him, highlight.
He was cancelled because of woke.
7-6 is just sensational. I've seen 5-4s.
Yeah.
But multiple 5-4s, but I don't think I've ever seen a 7-6.
Have you seen a 13-0?
Yes, I have.
Oh, of course you've seen a 13-0. You were probably at this game October 5th, 1946.
No, I saw a 13-0er in the Sheffield Senior Cup. Works up against Wurzburg Bridge, I want to say, someone like that.
Oh, okay.
And that wasn't that much fun, to be honest.
But well, this game was obviously...
at the Riverside was, you know what it felt like to me? It felt like a playoff game.
It did, yeah. It was a playoff,
playoff semi-final, second leg. Yeah, second leg, they both just go for it, you know, and they have to, and it's knockout football, essentially, and nobody is playing for a draw. Of course, Farke then did set up very differently in the second half, but it still had the drama of a playoff game, almost like Leeds Derby second leg. You know, that game that I watched very much as a neutral just felt like chaos, carnage. And there's been others down the years that you just think, oh, the playoffs are so good for this kind of thing. And that's what it felt like. And I suppose in a way, it was. Leeds had so much to gain. Borough had nothing to lose. So
yeah.
So they both, you know, they went toe-to-toe for 45 minutes at least.
It's probably why I can understand that the Newport County manager hasn't been listed on this website that I'm on, because when they lost 13-0 to Newcastle, which is obviously the joint record number of goals, I can see why he's left his name off there. In terms of the modern day, or relatively modern day, 2003 is the most recent one in which there was an absolutely barnstorming high-scoring game. That was Burnley 4, Watford 7, which is that's pretty class. Interesting.
That yeah. is class.
Trying to see, is there any players in here who are quite renowned? It's Michael Chopra was playing up front for Watford that day. Ray Lewington was the manager. I was really hoping that Sean Dyche was going to have been involved in that game, given his links to Burnley and Watford. But no, he wasn't. Yeah, interesting. Very, very interesting stuff. We've talked a lot about goals there. Should we discuss the final goal of the game that was conceded by Ilan Meslier?
No, let's talk about Borough's second, first of all, because they made it difficult, didn't they? Even after Leeds went 2-1 up. And Latte Lath, is that just a really good strike, or was Ampadu not tight enough and was Meslier not good enough in reacting?
At the time, I thought Ampadu maybe gave him that extra yard that he was able to sort of feint and then go again. I don't know whether I'd be too critical of Meslier there, although I am going to check to see what the XG on target was from that game, because obviously I know that Borough's XG for the whole game wasn't, you know, three goals, which would be in line with, you know, how many goals were actually conceded. So, I mean, Meslier didn't have his best game, I think it's fair to say. The XG on target for that one, yeah, not great. It's 0.32, which means that two times out of three, you'd expect a goalkeeper to save it.
I think it's the change in direction, because he's moving to his right. He's on his right foot. You are thinking he's going right-hand side, top corner, or, you know, the right-hand side of the net. Shooting back across goal took me by surprise, and it obviously took Ilan Meslier by surprise as well. I thought it was a great strike. I felt like Leeds were too generous to a man who doesn't really need any generosity right now. He's fine. Mm. He's absolutely fine, lads, without your kindness.
He was very, very good in flashes and spells. I think in particular the first half. I don't think he's a 90 minutes player though, Latte Lat. I don't want to say go missing because he scored twice, but he did have a period in the second half where he didn't really impact the game. And I think that's probably why he'll stay at Borough this season. Oh, sorry, next season.
You're saying he's still like a decaf?
He's still... Yeah, hey, look, some people like decaf coffee, right? Caffeine
I drink decaf coffee.
Yeah, so do I.
And then the third goal, are Leeds United owed a little bit of officiating incompetence? I feel like they probably are. You know, when you have Luke 09 Superman punching the ball into the sky, when you have moments like that, and we've had quite a few non-penalty awards this season for Leeds. Mm. We've had decisions against them that you didn't really agree with at the time. I feel like enough has gone against them that you could say, yeah, these things, you know, they even out. Although Farkas still believes that they've had 52 against and about three in their favour. That one, from a Borough point of view, was pretty unforgivable. I mean, that was it's not like we're talking Haji Wright's toenail, is it? You know, Nyonto was...
It was a whole body offside.
Clearly, a whole Willy Nyonto width offside. So, Lino definitely should have got that. But the move for the goal was fantastic. really. Yeah. Like, I mean, that if ever there was a reminder of what Leeds can do going forward after three games of doing precious little going forward, that was it, wasn't it? If you give them an inch, they take a mile, and they were all involved. You know, Gray wins it, Ritter's involved, Somerville gets on it, just turns the corner the way he does, and that ball through for Njonto was fantastic. Great finish too.
I do like that you decided to finish talking there just as I decided to take a drink. So there's a nice section of dead air there. Great finish. And I do think that is one of Nyonto's strong suits, is that he doesn't need many shots. I mean, that was his only shot of the game and he put it away. He's very composed when it comes to hitting the back of the net. I think about the goal against Bristol City. Was there a one? Did he score against? No, he didn't score against Peterborough. I'm thinking of the Bristol City game. But this season, I think before a couple of weeks ago, I saw a statistic that was he'd scored with 6 of his last 10 shots, which is exactly what you need going into, you know, a crunch period in the season. Is someone who, if you can get him one-on-one with the goalkeeper or in behind, you've got a very, very decent chance of putting them away.
He generates a lot.
Talk about the last two goals. Or do you want to go on? In fact, you know what? This is your podcast, Graham. Go on.
He generates a huge amount of power from not a great deal of space or backlift. And he's not a very big chap, but he strikes the ball incredibly hard and really sweetly off both feet. You know, we've seen him beat goalkeepers from distance with his right and his left. That one he swept home with his left. But I'm always quite impressed with how hard he hits it.
Yeah, he's clearly got, he packs a punch. I mean, I'm sure he's practiced that a lot. It was the fourth goal for Leeds that was next in the game, wasn't it? Somerville's second. You like to say that's him in his office. That's very much his trademark strike. But again, great work in the build-up by Junior Firpo. Lovely sort of hold-up from Patrick Bamford and Jorginho Ritter. And again, the finish is just exquisite.
There aren't too many players who have a trademark goal, you know, who have a goal that is just so synonymous with them. And what's impressive is that Somerville has made this goal synonymous with him in one season, essentially, yeah. Like one season of regular football. Last season, he only had 12 starts in the league. And he didn't do this all that often. But so many times this season, you needs to go and count how many of his goals have been cutting in from left to right and finding the far corner. I really like the goal against Borough because it felt like his route to goal was largely blocked. Like Borough had bodies there, and yet he still manages to whip that shot past defenders, past the keeper, into the net, gives them no chance whatsoever. It looked a goal. You know, when he came inside, it just looked like a goal was coming. There's been a couple of times recently when he's gone for that. And I don't know whether it was the conviction in the strike or his positioning with regard to defenders around him, but it didn't feel like it was coming. But it just felt like a goal. It was a goal all the way on Monday night. And that, you know, that ability to win the game is something that's made Somerville the player of the season. You know, the amount of times Leeds have relied on him for moments like that, that's probably what's clinched him that award. And, you know, we talked about the award and the timing of it laying down a challenge for Somerville to go and finish the season like the player of the season, like the best in the division. And that's a great start. You know, two goals and an assist is a phenomenal start to the last three games of the season. And the celebrations said a lot, didn't they? You know, in the dugout, the technical area, the fans, Willy Nyonto doing his level best to break his neck and end the season in full body traction. I hope everyone's seen his leapfrog of Somerville that he got sensationally wrong and landed on his head. He was lucky he didn't land head first on the advertising boards.
If he was taller, he probably would have.
If he was 3 or 4 inches taller, we'd probably be talking in quite somber tones about the season-ending injury for Willy Nyonto.
Well, look, I'm sure he could go to Joe Gerhardt and ask who his dentist is if he wanted to get his teeth fixed.
at 4-2 up, I felt like it was done and dusted because I felt like Leeds would hit them on the break for a fifth, but it didn't turn out that way. You've been absolutely champing at the bit to talk about the last goal of the game. Go on then. What would you like to say?
Well, do you think it was the best goal of the game?
Ooh, no.
From a sort of a difficulty perspective. And I mean, very, very few people saw that coming. Least of all, Ilan Meslier.
Or Ethan Ampadu, who lost him, let's remember.
Yeah.
It was his man, and he ran off Ampadu.
But I think if he tries to take that down, Ampadu has him covered.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great moment of improvisation, mm-hmm. Or a great moment of recognizing your surroundings, you know, and taking full advantage of them, you know, realizing Meslier was completely stranded and just nodding the ball over the top of his head into the net. If you're a Borough fan, you're absolutely delighted with a striker who can do that. If you're a Leeds fan, you're apoplectic that, you know, your defense and your goalkeeper have conspired to make the ending as nervy as humanly possible. I mean, we were in palpitation territory, weren't we, once that went in? Because it felt largely in control. It felt like Leeds were fashioning chances. Ruter, we should definitely talk about him. He'd made a lot of people very angry with his ball concessions, but I felt he really came into his own when the game was stretched, when Borough were pouring forward and when Leeds got the ball around halfway and had a chance to spring clear. It was his pass that put Bamford in and Bamford finished for the disallowed one. It was his pass that put James in and then James got absolutely crunched in the penalty area with a phenomenally timed tackle. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's not in control, is it? And shots are coming in and Meslier's having to make a save. Rodon's having to make a block. Firpo's having to head one clear at the back post. I think Farke was pleased with how they defended in the second half, apart from that goal. But it was definitely nervous. It was definitely far too nervous.
You know that early part of the second half when Leeds were inviting pressure? They didn't actually concede a shot.
No, and that's why Farke can say it worked. I've seen a lot of people saying it might not have worked that. It was 50-50. I don't think Farke felt it was 50-50. I find it fascinating that with three games to go, we've seen something new from Leeds. You know, I don't recall them playing. It's such a pronounced.
Wasn't there a period during the game against Norwich at Elland Road where they sat back and invited pressure?
Potentially, but something in the back of my head tells me though that was Norwich having a spell more so than it was Leeds, you know, folding back and sitting deep. You might be right. But it's certainly uncharacteristic. If it's not unique to this season, it's very, very rare that we've seen Leeds set up like that and play like that. And yes, a lot of people were saying, going absolutely doing their nut and saying, why are we inviting pressure? They're going to score. But I guess Farke was content that if the crosses were coming in from wide areas, that they could defend them. The difficulty with that is that I don't think Meslier looked very comfortable under some of the crosses and the aerial balls. The upside was that they weren't being played through and the chances weren't central and they weren't really chances, were they? They were crosses and balls into the box. But it was a fairly chanceless period until Leeds scored their fourth. And you've always got that in your locker to hit teams on the break at pace. So... was it worth it? Well, it worked. So, yes. Was it risky? Potentially.
I'll happily hold my hands up and say that I was sort of saying to you in the press box, like, they're not going to hang on here. You know, they will concede just because of the way that the game had gone previously. But ultimately, it did work. And when they did concede, it wasn't exactly because Borough were piling on pressure. It was just a hopeful lump forward. And then, as you say, the improvisation. It is interesting that we've seen something different, but I think it's a positive because you don't want your manager being too stubborn, or you don't want your manager being, I don't know, you want to exert control over the game, and Leeds exerted control by ceding possession, at least in that early portion. it sounds sort of counterintuitive to say, but they did go up the other end in a sort of a very quick vertical move and score their fourth because of the pressure that Borough had put on and the spaces that had opened up. You know, Firpo was allowed to just gallop through the middle, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Somerville was on the shoulder of the last man when Leeds scored that fourth. So it did work. And I'll tell you what else, it's incredibly gratifying that, I don't know if somebody from the YAP wrote that Leeds wouldn't face a low block at Borough in the week preceding the game, and then didn't face a low block, actually, and had the lowest possession share of the season, after saying that, actually, Leeds tend to do better when they don't have possession. Was that you?
Joe, I think even PJ post-Saxon would have been able to see that Borough were not going to set up in a low block. Why would they? You know, the playoffs might be gone, but Leeds at home, you know, Michael Carrick's not gonna have them sit three games to the end of the season. They want to score some goals and win some games, don't they?
I mean, if you want to get a result against Leeds, though, the blueprint was there, wasn't it, in the last three games?
Yeah, it was. So credit to them for going their own way. And it wouldn't make any sense to me to, if you're going to say to your players, we want to play football, we want to score goals, we want to be attacking, we want to have control, it would be counterintuitive to say to them, right, Leeds are coming, we're going to sit in a low block at home with three games to go with nothing really riding on it for us. It certainly wouldn't send a good message to the players or the fans. And I think that's what made it for such a good game. And here we are then, Leeds held out three enormous points and they move on to QPR now. And I think they're in a very, very good place compared with where they were going into Borough.
Yeah, very good place. I mean, obviously last night, we're recording this on Wednesday, the 24th, 2 days before the QPR game. Last night, we had Leicester versus Southampton, which was a close game up until it wasn't. Leicester winning 5-0 in the end. Saints just looking as though they'd thrown the towel in by the second half of the second half. And that kind of does make it seem as though Leicester kind of are away now, given how few games there are left, given how they do have a 4-point lead on Leeds with both teams having played 44 matches, you know, scoring five goals really did help their goal difference there. And at this stage of the season, having a 4-goal swing in goal difference is almost like an extra point. Are the title hopes gone, Graham?
It's not over till it's over, but it's incredibly unlikely. I think we're looking at a battle for second place now, aren't we? Which is fine, you know. Do you get a bus? Do we get an open bus parade for second place? Potentially.
I think after the season that they've had, I think they deserve something. And also the backdrop of the fans not getting, you know, the opportunity to go around the city and celebrate.
I think maybe after the season they've had, what is required is for them to find a massive open space and everybody just to sit down and in the sun and be quiet for an hour or two. You know, the team, the players, all just sitting there, just recovering together might be more apt than everybody getting on it. I suspect I know which of the two the city will choose if Leeds do go up. Leicester turned it on, didn't they? And Southampton couldn't handle it. I always enjoy football maths, you know, when people think that we beat so-and-so and so-and-so beat Team C, so therefore we should beat Team C. It's just funny how things work out. You know, Leeds quite handily beaten by Southampton earlier in the season, weren't they? And Leeds beat Leicester, but Leicester absolutely thrashed Southampton. What does it mean, Joe? What does it all mean?
Well, I'm going to turn your attention to something I've just sent you on WhatsApp, and it appears to be the Instagram story of one of the Leicester players, Yunus Akgün, in the dressing room after the 5-0 win last night. And it's got a caption, and it says loading, and then the trophy emoji. You've got all the players dancing around in a circle. You've got Enzo Maresca joining in. You've got Abdul Fatawu doing a dance in the middle of the changing room. They're not there yet, but it certainly looks as though they feel they are. What would you make of that? If that was Leeds, for example, and they weren't mathematically up, but it looked as though they were, and there were two games to play, Ipswich have got three to play, would you like that?
No. Let me just unblock you on WhatsApp and have a look at the
joke that you've made several times before. It's still not funny.
The video. You know where I think this comes from? I think they're too emotional.
I think so too. Yeah,
and I think that comes from the manager. I think he's up and down like a yo-yo. I think he's just a very, very emotional character, and I think that probably is where that comes from. It would make it tremendously amusing if they were to not.
Well, the quote tweet that I've seen it is Preston and Blackburn have the chance to do the funniest thing, because they're Leicester's two remaining games, which, you know what, is true. And I'm gonna nominate it tweet of the week this week from Liam Bruce, who does appear to be a Leeds fan. So congratulations, Liam, on tweet of the week. But yeah, I think they are there. I think 94 points is enough, and then, you know, they probably will win. I mean, given how Preston rolled over against Southampton, they'll probably win that. And then obviously last game of the season, Blackburn probably will be safe by then. They'll not have too much to play for there.
Yeah, it could be quite processional for them, couldn't it? And if they finish on 100 points, then you just have to take off your hat and say what an incredible season. Even if it felt like their world was coming to an end because the football wasn't quite as pretty as they wanted, you know, they have had a truly remarkable season. All of the top three have had a fantastic season. Southampton put together a really impressive season. They're on 84 points, and they might not even finish. Well, they probably won't finish in the top three. You know, that's remarkable. It just shows this season the standards that have been set. Does it suggest that it's a very much two-tier league and that the top four are miles ahead of everyone else? Yes. But the Championship is still very, very competitive, and we've seen a lot of results go against the top teams, enough to suggest that what they've done is still impressive. You know, that all four of them have put together incredible records. Ipswich have only lost six times in the league this season. Just incredible.
Graham, that's not what anyone wants to hear when they've still got Coventry and Hull to play.
But yeah, those are difficult, difficult games, both of them, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. Difficult games, but again, it is not my topic to discuss the fortunes of other teams. It's not my topic.
Yeah. So discuss Leeds United then, QPR.
Can I interrupt you?
Fine.
We were talking about how you think Enzo Maresca is just overly emotional, and it's clearly not because he's a bald man, because you're emotionless. could it be something to do with his Italian nationality, do you think? Because Willy Nyonto appeared to be quite filled with emotion, shall we say, as he was sort of re-entering the dressing room after Leeds had won at Borough.
Effervescent, wasn't he?
Effervescent.
Yeah. I didn't need you and your Italian heritage to translate that, because I, as a 14-year-old boy, went on a school trip to Italy, so I was very aware of...
Graham, I don't know what to tell you. You're not a 14-year-old boy.
Most, if not all, the swear words to be had, because we did a lot of research before we went on that trip. I found that very, very amusing. I found it even funnier that Leeds just punted it out on social media.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think whoever made the decision to put it out there should, in fact, be rewarded and encouraged that this is exactly scenes that everybody wants to see.
If it had been Joe Rodon, right, speaking in, oh, I suppose he could be speaking in Welsh, right? If it had been Sam Byram, you know, mild-mannered, Sam Byram, and he had come down the tunnel effing and jeffing and effing B this and great big C that. Like, do you think they would have just left it and put it out?
No, absolutely not.
No. It's a shame, really, because I'd really quite like to see Sam Byram go on a hugely X-rated rant. It just seems so beyond the steady Eddie character that he seems to be. I think that win meant a lot to Leeds. Mm. And Farke said afterwards, it's funny because I asked him if he'd seen any nerves in his team, expecting him to say, no, you know, nothing has changed in our mood. We've been quite calm. And actually, quite the opposite was true. He said, yes, you know, they were nervous. They were very nervous for this game because they're young lads and this is uncharted territory. Most of them haven't won something or won a promotion before or finished something off of this magnitude with the consequences that there are. So, yeah, it's weighty. It's a very, very weighty time for them. And so that win felt particularly big. And I wonder if that's a weight off the fact that they won that one, because I wonder if that has a great big psychological effect on them now, a big boost for QPR, where they will be without Daniel James, sadly.
Yeah, unfortunate injury that he sustained. An oblique abdominal muscle tear and costal cartilage injury. Basically, he's ripped his abs.
He's basically been torn asunder right down the middle, and you can actually, Rob Price can push his hand through Dan James and out the other side in a hilarious medical room prank. It looked to me and to all of Middlesbrough that Dan James was wasting time, because Leeds were actually in time-wasting territory and had begun to do what other teams have done so often to them. And James went down after a collision and kind of sat on the pitch or lay on the pitch and wasn't looking too keen to get up. And then he did get up. He played on, but he didn't look comfortable at all. Like, he was kind of
holding his side,
favouring that area. He went down again, sat down, and a Borough player picked him up. And I can only imagine the pain. If you've just torn an oblique and you've ruptured your coastline or whatever it was, then somebody grabbing you around the middle and hauling you to your feet must have hurt so much. The fact that he played on, though, because I imagine it's quite difficult to breathe. You know, when you pull like a little muscle in your back and you just don't want to watch anything funny or spend any time with your funniest friends because it's agony. No, you just want to lie there.
I don't know that feeling yet. I'm not of a certain age.
Neither is Dan James, and he did it.
He's still older than me,
but he played on. Just, you know, he kept running. So fair play, because that says a lot. But you could see at the full time whistle that he was in bother, and it wasn't good because he sank straight to the turf, and he was attended to. By
it was almost like, shall I tell you what it reminded me of? It was almost like at the end of a battle scene in a film or a TV series, and the team or the side that this character has been on has come out victorious, and then they look and they're bleeding from somewhere, and they've been shot or they've been stabbed at some point, and it's like, oh no, and then they sink to the ground.
Yeah, they collapse.
You're left wondering, will they be okay?
Yeah. And then you and get then like a shot of
release. So yeah,
you get a shot of like okay. The sunlight and the wind, like brushing the heads of the flowers or the trees, and he just fades away. Well, thankfully, Henry McStay, Leeds physio, was on the scene to ensure that Dan James didn't fade away, and they helped him, and he was able to walk back down the tunnel with help. But a supporter spotted through the team window. They don't need to read the newspapers. They go and have a look. They spotted that Dan James was on gas and air rather than pizza and beer on the team bus. So he must have been in absolute agony. Just sounds like a horrible one, doesn't it? You know, tearing anything is bad, but tearing something in your core must be awful. And it really does throw doubt over his involvement in the rest of the regular season, at least, doesn't it?
Mm.
Because yeah, I think he's definitely going to miss QPR, but can you, how quickly can you recover from a torn oblique
muscle of anything? Yeah. Is it when you hear the word tear, that's when it's like, okay, so it's not a sprain. It's not a grade one sprain. It's not a grade two sprain. It's like grade three. It's a tear. You're looking at weeks rather than days, aren't you?
Yeah, you are. And it's unfortunate.
I'm asking you because you clearly sound as though you've had quite a lot of back sprains and strains. I hope you haven't got one right now because I seem to be making you laugh an awful lot.
He's a good option, you know, a really good option off the bench. He's a good option in games like that where you're a goal ahead and you need to run the ball down the pitch or you need to counter and score a goal. And he's played a big part this season, a much, much bigger part, much more significant part than I think anyone would have predicted or credited him with, given how things had gone for him. And I think you have to applaud that. You have to applaud his rolling up his sleeves, coming back, not causing a fuss, not asking for a move away, not downing tools or refusing to travel to Birmingham, and just getting his head down, scoring goals, making assists, and being a team player. And he's not always the darling of the fans, because he can be a frustrating type, because now and again the end product isn't there. But this season, I don't think his role can be questioned at all. I think he's done himself proud.
Oh, yeah. He's got, what, 13 goals this season
in
40 league games? 8 assists, I think, as well. You know, to be involved in a goal every other game, pretty good going. And definitely will be a miss in these last two games, whether Leeds know it or not. Does give an opportunity, I suppose, to Jadon Anthony from the bench, given that he probably will be now the player that is called on when either Somerville or Nyonto need replacing. I mean, wouldn't it be quite the story if Anthony, who has played, you know, 1 minute here, 15 minutes there, has obviously had, you know, the immense personal tragedy of losing his mother this season. And it hasn't really been the year that he would have envisaged when he joined the club on deadline day. If he was to score a really crucial goal in Leeds' bid for promotion, that would be a lovely story. If it was, you know, 1-1 at Loftus Road in the 85th minute and Anthony pops up with the winner.
Yeah, it would. It'd be a great finish to the season. A really nice bookend for him, because I don't get the feeling that it's something that Leeds would, or he would particularly look to develop into something permanent in the summer.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either.
I don't really get that impression. It's been a difficult season for him on a personal note. So it would be nice to see it end with something something really tangible, you know, a really, really good memory to finish the season. Not just promotion, which would be fantastic, but a real personal highlight as well. Is Charlie Allen back at Leeds?
He is, yeah. Yeah, he was on loan at York, but I think he's come back because he wasn't playing very often.
Yeah. Just saying, Joe, they need a winger.
Yeah. It's not the time for that. He may have been, you know what, Graham? If he wasn't Northern Irish, right, do you think that you'd be saying a winger who had been recalled from a spell at a National League club because he wasn't playing would be ready for a spell in the team during the final two games of the season when Leeds are trying to get promoted to the Premier League?
I wouldn't even be able to tell you his name if he wasn't Northern Irish, Joe. I'd have absolutely zero interest.
Fair enough. At least you're honest.
Yeah. So QPR then, and the team that he picks, do you simply just dust them down and go again?
Yeah, I do. I don't change that starting lineup. I know it's a four-day turnaround, but when you think about how Daniel Farke sees things, you know, the players will have had time in their beds on Monday night. They wouldn't have got there too early, but they will have had a full night's sleep at home, not having to stay over in a hotel, not having to travel back very far. And they'll have had a couple of days training to get prepared for what QPR will throw at them. And then, you know, travel down to London on Thursday. We'll have to wait and see what the team is. But I wouldn't change it. I think stick with the winning team if he can, that is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would broadly agree with that. Again, I'd like to see more of Mateo Joseph, but maybe there's, you know, maybe there's time. Well, there is plenty of time for that, isn't there? Beyond this season, I wouldn't be keen to write him off as a contributor just yet, but I think it's obvious Farke is not going to start him at this stage. Mm-hmm. I'd be absolutely stunned if he started him ahead of Bamford after Bamford, you know, scored a goal and had a couple of nice bits of link-up play as well during the game, Bamford. Mm-hmm. So I think he'll go with Bamford again. I don't think he'll go with Peru again this season, unless it's out of absolute sheer necessity. I think he'll be a player coming off the bench. Ruter, you were leaping to his defence like the French National Guard, like the gendarme at halftime on Monday night when he was getting pelters from left, right and centre. Why were you so keen to offer a defence?
Because I'm right.
Why are you right? Go on, give us your take then. Clever Clogs.
16 assists he's got this season. Yeah, he's got one of the biggest progressive carry distances in the entire championship from, you know, a already very advanced starting position. He is someone who you can ping the ball into and he'll keep a hold of it despite the fact that he's got three men around him. He creates chances with his movement, he creates chances in build-up, creates chances with the final ball to players, wins penalties off his own back, you know, like that one at Borough, you know, got leads 30-40 yards up the pitch into the penalty area. I just think that if you're a team, you have to be able to mitigate for a creative maverick player giving the ball away often. Like you look at the teams in the Premier League, you look at the teams, the best teams in the world, the player that gives the ball away the most is the most creative. It's the one who tries things. It's, you know, your Trent Alexander-Arnolds at Liverpool. It's Kevin De Bruyne at Manchester City. I ultimately, it comes down to how you view football, I think. And if you want to play safe, if you want to play, you know, without mistakes, then okay, that's fair enough. But ultimately, you are going to make mistakes. So you have to accept that. If you want to play safe, that's fine. I understand that it's not, you know, he's maybe not the safest pick. But I counter that, and I think, again, the best form of defence is scoring goals and attacks. I don't see how you don't put him in this team for 90 minutes if you can at every opportunity, because he can change a game. He has the ability to create something out of nothing. And yes, he shouldn't be dilly-dallying it with it in his own half, but he's 21. Like, he'll grow out of that. He'll make better decisions. And then you'll still have that ball carrying. You'll still have that chance creation. Yes, he needs to work on his finishing. But again, if he was the full package, he wouldn't be at Leeds in the Championship. So you have to accept that there are going to be, I don't know, little nicks to his game that need improving.
No, I think you're correct in what you said there about where he'd be. You know, if Hoffenheim had themselves the complete package, then, you know, he'd be a Dortmund or an AC Milan or a Glasgow Rangers right now, you know, playing European football.
All those teams going to be in the Europa League next season.
I was just going to say that I just wish that he would have a little bit more recognition for the danger that exists in the areas where he plays sometimes. We mm-hmm. have seen him escape a marker deep in his own half and then create something from that situation. You know, we've seen him do that to really good effect. We've also seen him give the ball away in areas where it leaves his team exposed. I think that's where if I was to give him a list of things to work on over the summer, number one would be where you just don't lose the ball. You know that these are the areas where you simply do not lose the ball. If you have to pass it backwards or sideways, just do that. Number two would be his finishing. But beyond that, I actually thought his performance wasn't his best, but it was quite good, still quite good. And I thought it was impactful. And I thought he came into his own a little bit more. Yeah, particularly when you think of that moment late in the second half, he lets the ball run through his legs on halfway and turns – to beat his man. He drifts inside and Isaiah Jones has to take him out and take a yellow. The game stops. Everyone gets a breather. Leeds have a free kick in the Borough half and it eats up time. That's where you want a ball carrier like him, you know, on the pitch. And if he'd been withdrawn at halftime, you wouldn't have had that. You wouldn't have had the passes for Bamford or James either. And some of the defensive work he put in. There will be people that don't see it and don't agree. And that's absolutely fine.
Should get those cataracts fixed. Yes, you're right.
But if you don't want to be, if you don't want me to make a joke about you being PJ, then maybe you want to open your eyes a bit wider. He's had a good season. You know, he has. Yes, he's been
great season.
Quieter in terms of end product of late, but he should have had two assists, I think, on Monday night, which would have been 17 and 18 for the season. Is that right? 18 and 19, which
actually would be the record. That would be the championship record,
which is incredible. I mean, to even be on the cusp of the record for a player of his age, playing in what is essentially an unfamiliar position. You know, he hasn't played a huge deal of football at 10. Certainly hasn't played in a 10 in a system like this. So, another one who's had a good season and a good impact. If fit and well, he definitely starts Friday night. And maybe we'll see him. Maybe we'll see him finally get back on the score sheet. You know, he'll give Paddy Kenny the eyes and put one in the bottom corner.
Yeah, Paddy Kenny. Or in fact, who's been starting for QPR in goal? Is it still Asmir Begovic?
I'm just going to say yes.
I'm not so sure, you know.
Okay, so who did they play last?
I'm not so sure, but I am in a different way. Yes, I am sure that it is him.
It is him.
After Googling it.
He played again in the last game. Colback is in there. People don't know him. Lyndon Dykes, obviously. Proud Scotsman. He's there. Willock was a player of quite a lot of potential, wasn't he?
Yeah. The lesser of the, well, actually there's three Willock brothers. There's Joe, Chris and Matty. Matty, who was at Man United at one time. Steve Cook at the back. Come on. All right, Leeds have got a score. Come on, predictions. We're running over here.
Okay. Our cup runneth over. I'm going to say Leeds are too hot to handle and they're going to win 3-1.
Okay. I'm going to say it's a nervy encounter. Sorry, but it just is. And Leeds win 1-0.
As long as we don't get a repeat of long before you were born, Leeds went to QPR and Naki Wells double dribbled the ball into the net, like literally handballed it twice like a basketball player. In a very, very frustrating game. I feel like Leeds have lost quite a few games 1-0 or by a single goal in recent years at QPR. It simply cannot be that way. They have to win this, don't they? You know, if automatic promotion is to be a thing, they need to win this game.
And I tell you what, it's a great away end at Loftus Road. Very close to the pitch, across the two tiers, old school ground. Facilities might not be the best, but in terms of celebrating with the fans, if you score a goal in front of them, that's where you want to be.
I didn't realize that Gateshead had played there in your lifetime.
But you know what? Gateshead can't play there because they can't play in the EFL. Right. Anyway, that is everything from the Inside Elland Road podcast this week. We'll be back. When will we be back? Before the Southampton game next week.
Yeah.
Where we'll have a full sort of debrief on what happened at Loftus Road and whether any other young Leeds United players have been effing and jeffing as they come back into the dressing room. But thank you, Graham, for joining me on this one. Thank you for listening, and bye for now.
The Inside Elland Road podcast is sponsored by PR Supplies at Unit 2 Wither Park Industrial Estate in Leeds. PR Supplies, everything for the home.